Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of Talking Honor. I'm calling this the season premiere simply for the fact that this is the beginning of a new era of Talking Honor. If you missed last week's show, my longtime co-host, Lola Bradbury, has unfortunately had to step away from the program due to a variety of reasons and left me captaining this ship on my own. So this week, next week, maybe a couple, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, I don't know, where I'm going to have a couple guest hosts on each week, and we're going to try some things out and do some new things with the show and see where we go from there. But at the end of the day, the basic format's going to be more or less the same as always, focusing mostly on this week's episode of ROH Television, as well as any Honor Club live events, any news updates, things like that. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I run this little show. I contribute to a podcast on Wednesday nights called PWT Talks NXT, and I do written reports covering Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I'm joined today by two men. Kelly Wells, introduce yourself.
All right, guys. My name is Kelly. You probably know me already, also from PWT Talks NXT. I am the host of that show, put that up late every Wednesday, and I talk to Harley and a rotating team that also includes Tom Staupe, who was here last week or the week before, and Justin James. I also write the NXT tracker for the website, and I've got one to finish and send off today about all the recent call-ups from NXT.
So Kelly, tell us a little bit about your Ring of Honor history, how long you've been watching or your familiarity with the product.
So I'm just now back into it. So I've seen the last 3 weeks of TV. It's something you and Tom were talking about. I just thought, God, maybe it's time. Maybe I'll check it out on Twitter that you guys were talking about. So I decided to check out those last 3 weeks of TV. Also made time for Supercard of Honor and Masters of the Craft. So I've absolutely completely buried myself in it here these last couple of weeks. It's been kind of a revelation because I spent some time with it some years back. I got a couple of DVDs from a friend. DVDs. It was a long time ago. And so, checked out a couple
of VHS tapes.
Yeah, right. So this has been quite a while, right? Because when I last was kind of entrenched in the product, Jigsaw was there. And I don't think Jigsaw has been there for some time. It's been quite a while. So I was impressed by what I saw these last few days insofar as it seems like they're better at varying match styles and things like that. There are some overused moves. I feel like we see tornado DDTs on the extremely regular, but I really like that they've kind of varied their talent pool and what they ask of people.
And we are also joined this week by Ersin Desroches.
Harley, thanks for having me, man. And Kelly, thanks for having me as well. And thanks for all the listeners for having me. Wade found me on the side of the road trolling around the internet. And he was like, hey, do you watch Ring of Honor? And I was like, yeah. And he said, you want to talk about it? And I said, absolutely. And so here I am. And thanks for having me, guys.
So is this your first Torch podcast ever?
Yeah, absolutely. This is my very first PW Torch podcast.
Exciting. But you've been watching Ring of Honor for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I had Era of Honor Begins on DVD. There was a record store that I used to go to, and they had a DVD section, and for some strange reason, they started carrying off-the-wall wrestling DVDs like I picked up some like Japanese deathmatch DVDs and they had some Ring of Honor stuff. And so I was like, wow, let me check this out. And so, yeah, I've been there since, I've been watching since 2002, since the start. After the post Gabe Sapolsky era, I kind of drifted in and out, but I've always watched the major pay-per-view events and things like that. And I've tried the television just started being shown in my area of the world, which is Louisiana, about, I don't know, I guess about maybe 3 to 4 years ago. So that helped me to keep up with the TV more regularly.
Cool. Yeah, I've been watching the TV for, I want to say, 7 or 8 years now. But I only started watching the actual pay-per-views with the launch of Honor Club, because I could never justify the price tag before. Nothing against Ring of Honor. I didn't watch WWE pay-per-views until the network came along either. So that's kind of why we started this podcast the time when we did, was because it feels like a lot's happening for ROH this year. You got the launch of Honor Club. Supercard of Honor was their biggest crowd in ROH history. Cody and the Bucks are doing this all-in event in September, which is going to be a big deal. So it feels like a lot's happening right now. It's a good time to be chatting about ROH. On that note, breaking news for regular Talking Honor listeners. Starting with this episode and going forward, we're now going to be available every Tuesday through PW Torch, and we should hopefully in the near future be a part of the new livecast lineup, where there's sort of one big show spotlighted every day of the week. So Tuesdays are going to be ROH Day with me and my guest hosts. Wednesday will be me, Kelly, and the gang over at NXT. Thursday will be the Impact Wrestling crew, and so on. So hopefully that'll get us some bigger exposure, and it'll play into... We're kind of setting Monday as the official ROH watch date. Monday morning, the new TV is usually available to stream through ROHWrestling.com, and in the evening, it plays on Fight TV. So, last night, Masters of the Craft, Columbus, Ohio. In the old days, pre-Honor Club, this would have been a house show, but now there's no such thing as house shows in ROH anymore. We get to watch every single live event, like this one. Kelly, let's start with you. You didn't watch it live at the time, but you watched it today, correct?
Yep, I watched some very late last night until I couldn't hold out anymore. I believe I saw just up to the six-woman tag, which is probably just a couple matches in, and then I watched the rest of it today.
So, well, let's start. Overall thoughts and Honor Club quality. Did you have any issues loading it, playing it, anything like that?
No. I can't say I love the interface of the Ring of Honor website, but that is me nitpicking. I didn't have any streaming issues at all. Had a couple of hiccups that I think were overuse, system being throttled here, but it was very short, so it worked out well. As far as the match quality itself, show quality, it did really feel, it felt like a good house show. It felt like I've been to a lot of house shows in my life. I've probably been to about, I don't know, somewhere between 40 and 60 wrestling shows in my life, and a lot of those are house shows, and a lot of those involve workers just kind of going through the motions because nothing means anything and nobody wants to get hurt on a house show for sure. This didn't have that feel. It felt like a little something was on the line, at least. That was kind of cool. This Defy or Deny match, I did have to look that up before the show because I didn't want to go in cold. I had no idea what that was. Kind of an interesting idea. Show quality was good. A few things moved forward, and really, really loved the Lethal Gresham match.
For sure. Yeah, with these shows now, with the Honor Club, it's a weird in-between state for the shows. This would have traditionally been a house show, but because there's such a larger audience watching than your traditional house show, it feels like they know we need to raise the stakes a bit. We need to have... You know, Lethal and Gresham weren't holding back. Cody and Taven, that was maybe not a pay-per-view quality match, but definitely on par with TV, if not above it. And they made sure to give us some stakes. You know, we got a television title match. We got a number one contender match for the world title. I was kind of afraid when they started doing this that we were going to really burn through stories and burn through potential matchups by televising every single house show. But ROH only really does maybe two or three house shows per month in addition to TV and pay-per-view. So I don't know. Maybe it's not as big of an issue as I was concerned. Urson, what are your thoughts on the house show situation? And did you have any issues with streaming quality or anything like that?
I did. My stream didn't start working until the Silas and Cheeseburger match. So I missed the opening tag match. And then after the entire show was over with, I tried to just rewind it. And I figured I'll, you know, by the time it's over, I'll just start back at the beginning and catch the tag match. And I still couldn't watch a tag match even after the show was over with. So, yeah, they have some issues. But once it came on and once I was in on the Silas and Cheeseburger match, I didn't have any problems at, you know, after that. So I was happy about that. As far as the, you know, as far as the quality of the show went, I was disappointed. It was basically a glorified house show. And since the launch of the streaming service, I was expecting them to sort of, ramp it up a little bit, because as you said, it's not like they do five house shows a week. You know, they only do a few. So I was kind of expecting more, I guess, more of slightly a pay-per-view quality, and that's not what it was. I thought it was basically a house show with a couple of, well, the Bucks match was really killer. The Gresham and Lethal match was good, but everything else kind of felt very house show-esque, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I can see that. I know the first, well, first off, I'll say exact same issues as you, which is I was on the website, logged into Honor Club at 6:55, waiting for it to switch from off-air to on-air, and nothing happened until a good around 7:20. And I know at that point, people who had paid $10 to order the event through Fight TV were already watching the show. They had no problem. They loaded up the first match. I never got to see Coast to Coast and the Dogs, I believe it was.
Yeah, that's not on there at all. I just, at the very beginning of my feed when I started it this morning was Silas and Cheeseburger. I didn't even realize there had been a tag match we missed.
Huh. So, okay. Well, I guess good news. Not an issue on any of our ends. Apparently, whoever in the arena, I guess, was recording for Honor Club never hit the button. And so the Fight TV cameras were good to go. But Honor Club, I don't know. That's very odd. And I will say this is the first time I've had this issue. I know a lot of people have had a lot of issues with Supercard, 16th anniversary, not being able to watch it at all live. This is the first time I've had an issue with Honor Club. My biggest thing with ROH right now is just their customer service is terrible. It's the kind of thing, you know, at 7:15 when I thought the show should have started and it hadn't, I'm checking their Facebook page. I'm checking their Twitter, looking for any sort of update on their end, and there's nothing. Dead silence, no announcement from them, and many, many comments from other fans like ourselves going, what the hell, where's the show, what's going on, I want my money back.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday Edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn to go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Just for clarification, on Fight TV, if you wanted to see this, you had to pay $9.99. Is that correct?
Yeah, for this one. They treated it as an internet pay-per-view.
Okay, so every Ring of Honor show on Fight TV is $9.99. How much was Supercard? Was that $9.99 as well?
I'm not sure. I just watched through Honor Club on ROH Wrestling.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's right. Yeah. I was there, so I didn't.
You didn't have to order it.
No, I didn't have to order it, but I've listened to and read so many reviews, and I've heard about so many issues with it that, yeah, I feel bad for the people that didn't get to see the whole thing or caught it in the middle. I mean, that's a real shame, and hopefully they can get this stuff sorted out quickly.
Yeah, the thing Lola said, and I said this in the past on this show too, is she and I were pretty forgiving about these sort of things. I know ROH doesn't have the kind of money that WWE does. So comparing Honor Club and the WWE Network, not fair. But at the same time, you only have so many chances. People only have so much goodwill. When 16th anniversary had issues, people said, okay, like I'll give you one more shot. And then Supercard of Honor had issues. They probably lost a lot of people in that transition. Now Masters of the Craft, starting 20 minutes late, halfway through the second match. I don't know. How long are certain people going to forgive this kind of thing?
Supercard of Honor, that to me, again, you know, I didn't have to order it, but just hearing about all the problems, I mean, that is totally unforgivable almost, because you're putting on, you know, what was the biggest show in the history of the promotion. You have a sold-out arena, 6,000 people. You have built up this Kenny Cody thing. I mean, everything that was surrounding the event, the hype, the people, the crowd, everything. I mean, that show should have come off without a hitch on their streaming service.
Yeah, and I don't know the technical – you know, I don't know what the problems are. I don't know what's hindering them so far, but they definitely need to – be working overtime to get this stuff up and going. But, I mean, in terms of, I said in my written report even, you can't fault the wrestlers themselves. I feel like they're going out there and they're doing their best. We had a couple of matches on this, on Masters of the Craft that I loved, that I thought were great. Kelly, Lethal Gresham, your favorite?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I really, really love the selling from Gresham and the story they told here, and was hoping that it would lead to another because, you know, I haven't seen the history of this. I didn't know if this was the rubber match, if this was the end. I know of Lethal. I've seen a lot of Lethal's work here and there, a lot of it in TNA. I actually caught a lot of the Black Machismo era for him. So I've seen him doing his weirdest and doing great stuff in the ring. Gresham is basically new to me. I haven't seen a lot of him, and I thought that the story of this match worked really well. Maybe if I had been around longer, I would be bugged by the fact that there's no heat on this feud. But because I'm a newcomer and I'm just kind of throwing myself headlong into this and getting into it again, it didn't bother me that there's no heat on this feud because the story – In the Ring was so well told. Hopefully this goes somewhere really interesting for Gresham. And it seemed like that's what they were trying to sell us on, that this was a big step up for Gresham, win or lose. And I almost thought that was it, that they'd just blow that up. But we'll see if the third one brings a heel turn for either guy. They're more or less both working face as far as I can tell. So I liked that. The big schmoz, the 8-man tag. This felt a lot like one of the pre-tournament matches you would get like on G1 Climax in New Japan. It didn't matter who won, really. It was just a great way to get a bunch of good workers on one show. And then there was some really, really silly stuff like the head scissor chain.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, and I think that's the perfect place to use stuff like that. If you're going to do it at all, then do it there. And I'm not opposed to a little bit of that silliness. I probably used to be more of a purist, but I'm not at this point. And I had a lot of fun with that. And there were a lot of reasons, I think, to see both sides go over. And then lo and behold, they actually tell a bit of a story here. They move a storyline forward. So felt like a house show match because it was goofy, but they still kind of – they gave us just a little bit in terms of storyline progression.
Yeah, I loved Lethal and Gresham for sure. This was, I think, their second match. I want to say their first was at Honor Reigns Supreme, which was another Honor Club house show event. And that one was just thrown out there. That was just, here's two good wrestlers on the roster having a match. And Gresham looked so good. Gresham's historically been kind of in the same position as Coast to Coast, where more or less enhancement talent. He'd pick up a win here or there, but it was pretty rare. He was low guy on the totem pole. But that first match against Lethal really, I think, opened a lot of eyes to Gresham and raised his stakes a bit. So they do another match. He looks great again, still falls short. And I love the idea of going back to this. I don't know if he wins the next one or if they play this out for a little while longer. Part of me thought afterwards maybe Gresham would turn heel, but I don't know if he needs to. I think if the story is more about, yeah, just if him holding his own against Lethal is making him look like a star, even in defeat. And if he ever does finally beat Lethal, that'll be the performance that elevates him up into being a big name for the company. I don't know. Urson, what were your thoughts on Lethal and Gresham?
I really liked Lethal and Gresham. That was probably my second favorite match on the show. My first favorite match being the 8-man. I really, really liked that quite a bit. I thought that was a 4-star match in my book. I really dug it. I dug a lot of the spots. I know it's not for everybody, but if it's for you, I think you need to go out of your way to catch that match. I thought it was really good. Shane Taylor looked really good. The crazy spot with the human centipede that Adam Page flips over. I thought all that just came off really good. And, you know, that's probably what a lot of the fans that were there paid to see. And I really think they got their money's worth as far as Gresham and Lethal go. That was probably my second favorite match. I thought it was really good. Jay Lethal, I've been a big fan of his for a long time. He's really, really good. I know there's a lot of criticism that sometimes it looks like he's not going all out. But I thought here he definitely was. I largely don't have many criticisms about him, except for the fact that he's only 32 years old. And they already talk about him like he's a legend. And it's like, man, this guy's got a lot of wrestling left in him. Like, we can do a lot with him. So that's more of the presentation of him that kind of bothers me. But as far as he is concerned, I really like him. Gresham is fabulous. I guess my only criticisms of this match were that kind of to Kelly's point, the match didn't really have any heat to it. And I think when you're going to do this technical type of match, there needs to be some, you know, really, you know, super strong selling to get this over. And not that they didn't sell, you know, but it's kind of like the New Japan main event style, where they don't do a lot of moves, but they have a lot of selling involved and a lot of very awesome selling involved in the things that they do. You know, Gresham's doing some of these like Zack Sabre Jr. like octopus holds and stuff, and Lethal's just not putting it over to at that caliber, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, at that like type of New Japan main event caliber. When Zack Sabre Jr. does an octopus hold to somebody, it looks like they need to go to the hospital immediately. You know, when Gresham's doing it here, it didn't have quite that that oomph to it. But the match, you know, for what it was, it was really good. And as Harley said, yeah, I could totally see this building to Gresham gets a win and it elevates him. I just wish that Lethal would be more involved in something a little more high profile. It seems like after his title reign, his year-long title reign, or however long it was a long time. It seems like he's just kind of lost in the shuffle now, but yeah. I don't know. Harley, what do you think about Lethal?
No, I can definitely see that. We've made that case in the past, which is every time a pay-per-view comes around, it's like, well, what do they do with Lethal? He's not really in a feud with anybody. He keeps talking about last week on television, Coleman was needling him about it on Coleman's Pulpit, saying, so your 2017 resolution was to become the world champion. Now your 2018 resolution is to become world champion again. Is that going to be your 2019 resolution too? Just mocking the fact that, like, you know, the comparison I've made a lot of times is Lethal is kind of in the John Cena state right now. He's a top name. He's presented as this multi-time champion, decorated guy who's been around for a while, and he's always near the top of the card. But much like Cena right now, he feels directionless. I don't know. I don't even really see Lethal going after the title again this year. I mean, he faced Dalton at a 16th anniversary and lost. So now what? This little thing with Gresham is nice and it'll help elevate Gresham. But is that all Lethal is now? Like you said, he's kind of young to be the guy who's just the veteran putting over the young talent.
Well, I see a couple of reasons for that. Maybe for one, you got to tell some story with him, keep him front of mind if you want him to be an important piece for later. I also think the idea of him being a veteran might be kind of nature of the beast. He's not the oldest guy on that roster, but he's probably one of the ones that has hung around ROH the most, just because ROH kind of obviously becomes a feeding ground for WWE and for, you know, as they raid talent and things like that. These guys don't work as long in this particular company. I would like to see the average length of time a person spends in the company, because ROH, it seems like turnover is very, very high because you got guys moving on to other things. And so 32 might seem like old for a guy who he was world champion for a long time and has hung around a long time since. So I guess I see it from that perspective. But when you said he was only 32, I don't know what I would have guessed, but I would have shot higher than that. I probably would have gone about 4 or 5 years older.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Well, hasn't Ring of Honor always kind of had this problem? I mean, going back years now, where a guy gets a title, a heavyweight title run, and when it's over with, it's almost like they have to move on to another promotion or something because Ring of Honor doesn't know what to do with them.
Yeah, I knew that from way back that it was a long time before there was a two-time champion, I think, or at least very many two-time champions. They'd have one very, very long title reign, and that was it. That's why I was surprised when they mentioned Jay Briscoe was two-time champ, because I didn't realize it was two. One of the few matches I saw, I saw the pay-per-view where he won his first one, which was odd. I guess I had just bought that one or something like that. But I know that historically they have not done a lot of multi-time world champions in Ring of Honor. And that's fine if you want to do that. But, man, you got to do something with these guys. If you ask them to carry the ball and they do a good job for a year, it'd be nice to give them something.
Some sort of exit strategy.
Yeah, and hopefully the storyline is something. Maybe the idea is they just figure, well, once they've done that and they're done there, they're going to move on anyway. They're going to go to PWG or CZW, win a title there. So maybe they just don't want to tie themselves down to a wrestler that they don't think is probably going to even hang around much longer.
Yeah, even a month or 2 months ago when Kenny King won the TV title back from Silas, they said Kenny King's a two-time champion. I think they said he's only the second two-time television champion in company history. And I was like, wait, really? You compare that to WWE? Guys like Miz are like a seven-time intercontinental champion.
Jericho with 9. Yeah, and all the guys who've had a ton of tag team reigns, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to advocate for ever doing that.
No.
but yeah, we definitely need I think it's cool that I believe it's Aries had it twice, Briscoe had it twice, Adam Cole had it 3 times, and that's it for your multiple Ring of Honor heavyweight champions as far as I know. So, you know, I mean, I'm okay with it. I definitely prefer that to, I'm a 30-time tag champion, U.S. champion, and heavy, whatever.
USWA. I don't know if you ever knew USWA, but
yeah.
Jerry Lawler, 45-time champion or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And this is kind of on the same subject. Did you guys see Austin Aries' belt collector gimmick?
I did. Yep.
What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I'm a fan. That's a good way to use him. It's something that I know going way back. I saw it as a kid and I remember thinking that was so cool. And I don't remember who it was. I want to say I was watching NWA or something. So it was one of the territory guys who was just moving around, winning different titles. And it just was this really, really awesome visual when somebody was holding all these titles. Then WCW kind of did it with Lance Storm. They had him win and like in the dying days of WCW. He wins 3 titles and then he just gives them to the other 2 guys in his faction and they allow it because WCW was the worst at the time. And so I think that's a fun way to use Aries, who is his best when he's being cocky. And then you just want to hate him, but he's got like this visual to back it up. I think it's a great use of him.
Yeah, but we've had that. I keep saying we. Lola and I have had that conversation on this show in the past. So when Aries walks out on stage with 12 title belts hanging over his arms and says he wants the ROH TV title, does that make the ROH television title more or less important? Does it seem more important because this guy who's a multi-champion already really wants this belt? Or does it seem less important because for him, it's just another notch in his bedpost?
I think it's more depending on how he presents it. As long as he is willing to say, but there is one thing I have to have. Something like that, really, really put over that title before he wins it and make sure he, I mean, that's all on him. That's all on the worker putting over the title rather than just himself, because he can get both himself and the title over in the process. So that's all up to Aries.
I think the Aries belt collector gimmick has to be the markiest gimmick ever, because to keep that gimmick up, belt collector and walk around with like 10 belts, you always have to be in a title match to keep it going. Right. You can't not be if you're the belt collector, you can't not be in a title match. So Austin Aries is like totally worked his way into constant title matches as long as he keeps this gimmick going. But it was cool seeing him at Supercard of Honor, and I'm a huge Austin Aries fan, so whatever he does is fine with me.
Yeah, that's clever on his part, and I kind of think it, like, I remember Triple H was that way. They had his character, like, his entire character was that he was absolutely obsessed with the world title, and so that's the story they told with him, and it was just like, it makes sense to have a character like that, but of course Triple H pitched that, so he was like, well, this is the only thing that drives my character, so I'm in the title match all the time. Yeah, just like a very good piece of business from somebody we know now. We really have the scope. We really have some idea of how good a businessman he really is.
Well, that's probably on par with Vince booking himself to make out with all these gorgeous young blonde women.
Right. Yeah.
That's my character. It's what I do.
Nice work if you can get it, I suppose.
So final, before we move on from Masters of the Craft, I think myself, Urson, and Sean Radican are going to be doing a longer podcast on Wednesday talking about Masters of the Craft match by match. So we'll get into more things. But yeah, a couple of little storyline developments here. Marty Scurll earned himself another world title match sometime in the future. Matt Taven's win over Cody. The commentators really spun this as Matt Taven should be in that conversation too. He pinned a former world champion. He's on the upswing. He should be maybe looked at for a match coming up. And then Hangman Page hugged Flip Gordon. What do we make of that? Urson, we'll start with you.
I'm sorry. Look, wait. I want to take a step backward. During that Cody and Matt Taven match, you know, I know it's I know for all of us, it has been a long couple weeks of professional wrestling. I was hanging in there. I was hanging in there like a champion, guys. But when Matt Taven got an axe.
I know. I had the same thought. And I was like, I know where he's going with this.
When he got an axe, dude, when he got a – bro, he got an axe. And he went at Cody, bro, with a wood chopping axe. I just – my whole brain just shut down. Like the whole 2 weeks of WrestleMania, indie wrestling, New Orleans, everything, it just – I totally shut down. I thought that was so redonkulous, man. Like what was that?
Right. You can do that in a company that's always ridiculous. Like you could probably do that in Combat Zone or something like that and get away with it. I just thought it was a little odd because they spend the week talking about the Louisiana Athletic Commission and like what they will and won't do. They're like, they'll shut down the show. But then when an axe got brought in, yeah, right. And then then there's an axe introduced and the announcers are like, well, what are you going to do? It's a first blood match. He's going to hack off a limb. Ha ha ha. It was like, wait, no, there's murder potentially going on. Probably yeah, can't like, do that.
Why don't you just walk out to the ring with two knives and just when the bell rings, just immediately try to stab your opponent?
Yeah, you'd be the worst policeman ever if you were watching this and you were like, I'm going to see how this plays out. Like, there's an axe, but I'm not worried yet.
But even better for me was before the match, Taven smeared Vaseline on his face. That's like a boxing gimmick, I guess. But the referee ran over and was like, no, and was wiping the Vaseline off with the towel.
He stopped the Vaseline. But
right.
We don't let you put lotion on your face, but axes are fine. So are big, heavy wooden tables. And what else did they use? A roll of quarters.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as Adam Page hugging Flip.
Yeah.
I've kind of always had the feeling over the past few weeks that Flip. I just keep waiting for the Young Bucks to give Flip the Bullet Club shirt.
That would seem to be where we're headed, but Cody hates him so much. Not to mention that Flip keeps flirting with his wife. So. I don't know. The Bullet Club, like, we don't have time to get into that today, but I have no idea what's going on with there anymore. I kind of really hoped coming out of Supercard, we'd be moving into the next chapter. It'd be clear that either Cody or Omega had left Bullet Club. Somebody knew something was happening. I don't know where we stand. I don't know who's leading Bullet Club these days. I guess everybody is still in it.
Even though Kenny and the
Bucks aren't friends anymore.
No,
I really feel like. Oh, okay, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, Kelly. I'm totally with you, Harley. Like, totally agree. We don't know anything about what's going on with the Bullet Club, but I think that all of those different layers about Cody and Flip and Brandy, where does the Bucks' loyalty lie? Where's Marty Scurll's loyalty lie? Where does Paige's loyalty lie? What's going on with Kenny and Ibushi? And I think all of that crap is I think that's what they want, you know? I really didn't expect coming out of Supercard that we'd have it all figured out. I think all these multi-layers of what these people are thinking, where their loyalties lie, who they want to go with, I think that's kind of the story. That's the way I took it anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is the intended soap opera, and I feel like we're close to that NWO tipping point where you've just watered it down too far and it starts to lose steam as a result. Like, obviously we know it's still working. Their shirts sell like gangbusters and everything like that. But when everybody's in Bullet Club, then what do you do?
Bullet Club Wolfpack.
Yeah, right. and maybe they'll do that. And if they do it, I'll play along and I'm sure I'll have a few laughs. But I feel like at least they're doing jobs, which the NWO didn't do enough of, and that kind of killed the whole thing. It was like they were supposed to be heels, but they were cool and they beat everyone. So, like, everybody ended up looking worse for it. I don't know. I hope there's a plan, and I hope things continue to evolve, but I would not assume at any point that we'll know what's going on for very long. I think that's the intended outcome here. I think they want us to be wondering all the time what's up with them.
Yeah, I like all the layers, and I like that each person has a clear, their own inner monologue and their own view of the world. It's in part due to the success of being the elite, and it's what makes each of these people seem so fully formed as characters. I just feel like we've been in this wishy-washy area where they're friends with Flip, but he's not part of the Bullet Club, and Cody and Kenny both claim they're leaders, but they don't like each other. I feel like we've been in this chapter for too long. And it's time for something to change. I just don't know when that is. If it wasn't at Supercard, I don't see it happening on ROH television. I don't know when the next big event is.
I'm looking into my, you know, crystal ball here, and it's very cloudy and it can't be trusted. But I'm thinking that I'm thinking New Japan. I think that's where the Cody Kenny. I think they want to try to get a couple more matches out of this, obviously, and I think we'll look for that. I'm looking for that conclusion to happen at a New Japan pay per view. I was actually surprised that they gave Ring of Honor this first match.
So was I. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And maybe they'll do this as. This could be something that they string out to the G1, because we've got that in just 2 or 3 months here. And if they're in the same block, then obviously you can work towards a match there. That is one place to blow it off that will give it extra stakes on top of everything that's going on. I don't know. I don't know when this is going to end or if I should expect it to end.
Well, I guess that's what they want us. They want us to be left confused and wondering where we go from here.
Yeah.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So television this week, we had essentially two matches, officially, I guess. Is a gauntlet match count as one match?
I've wondered about that for a long time, and I shouldn't care, but I keep statistics just like you do, and yeah. It really bugs me. I don't know.
In my stats, I wound up going with the decision to tally this as five, the take gauntlet as five matches, because I figure we got to start, we got to finish, you got a pinfall. That's a match, yep. Right? I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about the other match first. Frankie Kazarian versus Hiromu Takahashi. Takahashi is one of these guys who shows up every now and then. ROH has a working agreement with New Japan, as well as CMLL out of Mexico, RevPro out of England, now Stardom out of Japan as well. So Takahashi shows up now and then. He was actually friends with The Addiction, Kaz and Daniels, a couple of years ago. And they kind of alluded to that last week in a promo. None of that really came into play here. This was just kind of a match, a singles match. I think Takahashi's appearance was just to give a little boost to the crowd at the end of the taping, give a surprise. Hey, here's somebody from New Japan that you don't get to see all that often. It was a good match. It's not a surprise that the New Japan guy goes over, because that happens 90% of the time in ROH. I don't know. Kelly, what were your thoughts?
I'm a huge fan of Hiromu. I just started watching New Japan again about a year and a half ago, probably about a year ago, and I've really taken to him. And he was always, I thought he was a good part of Los Ingobernables de Japón and everything like that, but really, really realized how much I loved him in that four-way match on the January 4th show that he had with Kushida and Ospreay, and I think it was Skrull, right? Was the fourth one?
Yeah,
and I thought that I was going to be cheering for Kushida in that match, but by the end, I desperately wanted to see Hiromu win it. I still love Kushida, but I just, by the end, I was like, I might be one of this guy's biggest fans. Seeing him against Kazarian here was cool. I did see a bunch of Kazarian way back in the 1 6-month or year long stint I had watching TNA. I cannot believe the shape he's in. Like, he's just in ridiculously good shape for his age. So
the
that
commentators
was cool.
Mentioned that. They were like, look at this guy.
Right. Yeah. It's like they were saying just what I was thinking, and they see him, you know, every week, but I hadn't seen him in years, and I just could not believe how good he looked. I wasn't even 100% sure he was still working. But yeah, he looked great. He's in a tag team. He's holding the tag title, sort of. He doesn't have possession of it, but he's a tag champion. And so there was no reason for him to go over. So, yeah, just a fun match with some of Hiromu's silliness with the cat. And he continues to just get better and better in the 7 years that he's – 7 or 8 years that he's been wrestling. And I hope that he's still on the way up.
For sure. Urson, thoughts on Takahashi and Kaz?
If there is a Hiromu Takahashi fan club I would like to join, please contact me. I would like to possibly maybe be the vice president, or I just love Hiromu Takahashi. He's a freaking amazing wrestler. His matches with Dragon Lee and over in what was that, CMLL? Those were just, God, just blow-away banger matches, man. And the stuff he's doing in New Japan is, it's off the hook. And I pop every time for the Sunset Flip Powerbomb, although he, to the floor, although he didn't do that in this Kazarian match. No need to do that on television, but.
Yeah.
Los Ingobernables de Japón is booked for the War of the Worlds stuff, so maybe Hiromu just took an early flight and decided, like, hey, yeah, I'll do TV. That's cool. Yeah, put me in a match. I don't know. But, yeah, I love him. I thought this was a fantastic TV match. This is what I totally expect when I watch pro wrestling on TV. This is what I want to see. Kazarian, you know, he's on the back end of his career. I love Frankie Kazarian. I think he's a, you know, He's a great professional wrestler. I've always enjoyed his matches. Love him and Daniels together. No need for him to go over here. I just really thought this was a fantastic TV match. Like, when I sit down and watch pro wrestling on television, this is what I want to see.
Yeah, I forgot LIJ are booked for War of the Worlds. The whole tour, I think, which is early May.
Yeah. So Liger, too. Liger as well.
So maybe I didn't know about Liger. All right.
I think that was just announced today. Or yesterday, maybe. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, we're breaking news on this show, man.
Right. Sweet.
But maybe this will turn out to be foreshadowing. Maybe we'll get Ingo Bernables versus SoCal Uncensored for the six-man titles.
That'd be great. I assume it would be probably Evil Bushi and Sonata. They work together a lot. Obviously, Naito won't do that one, but yeah, or maybe he will. But I would assume that he'll be in a higher profile singles match, if not a 5-on-5.
Yeah, maybe Tetsuya and Lethal, because that seems to be where Lethal is now. He gets a big match against somebody.
Yeah. Right.
There's not really much on the line, but just a chance to go out there and have a great match.
For sure.
And then the bulk of this week's TV was this big tag team gauntlet match. This was pretty much every tag team in the company, with the exception of Champions the Briscoes and Best Friends due to Beretta being out on injury. Otherwise, yeah, I can't think of a tag team that wasn't in this match. And I quite enjoyed this simply because it told a lot of stories. We got Bruiser Malonis as the up-and-coming big men. We got Coast to Coast looking like... Coast to Coast have been on a big upswing ever since beating the team now known as War Raiders. So having them lose, but having them lose because of backstage shenanigans, I thought that was great. Young Bucks went over in the end, which makes sense to me. Young Bucks seem like the only team in the company right now that are credible challengers for the Briscoes. Bruiser Malonis, Coast to Coast are being built up, but they still feel a step below the Briscoes and the Bucks, as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. Urson, what were your thoughts on the Tay Gauntlet?
Harley. Man, I don't know, dude. I'm not into the Beer City Bruiser and Malonis. That's not my thing. I don't know. That's not my thing. I'm not into the Dogs. I didn't really get into this until Motor City Machine Guns got involved, and then I thought, you know, the pace picked up and it got good. Young Bucks went over as they should. Like you said, the problem here, this was a fine TV match. There was nothing wrong with this. It was good. You know, I mean, I enjoyed it for, you know, pro wrestling on TV. This was great. The problem here is we don't have credible tag teams to face the Briscoes other than the Bucks. I don't know. I'm just not into any of these teams, except I'm kind of into Motor City Machine Guns, if only because some of my friends don't like them. I think I'm just being contrarian and liking them because of that. I love the Young Bucks. I freaking love the Young Bucks. Who doesn't love the Young Bucks? Let me tell you something. The Young
Jim
Bucks. the young Bucks and Hiromu Takahashi are just pleasures to watch. I mean, if you're listening to this right now and you've never seen Hiromu Takahashi or the Young Bucks, which if you're listening to this, You probably have seen these people.
Probably have, yeah. Right.
You know that these are good TV matches. The Young Bucks and Hiromu Takahashi, just joys to watch anything they do. But to Harley's point, which is, you know, the ultimate point here, Young Bucks win, and they become really the only valid team to face the Briscoes. I don't know. Kind of ends on a sour note, I guess.
Yeah, even if they feud with the Briscoes for, say, 3 months, that still only gives 3 months to build up another team to their level. And I don't, you know, maybe they can do it with Bruiser Malonis. Maybe they can do it with Coast to Coast. Right now, it seems like it's asking a lot. But, hey, I'm open to ROH proving me wrong. And I don't know why, but I love the dogs. God help me.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
I have no idea. There's something about it. They're so stupid and goofy that just hits me. And, like, I enjoy it on the same level that I enjoy Breezango and acts like that. I don't know. Kelly, I take it you don't approve of...
Red
Titus and Little Willie.
I hate them for the same reason. I hate, like, Enzo Amore and Jersey Shore. Like, I just can't imagine people I'd less likely hang out with than these guys. They're okay. They're fine in the ring, I guess. They're nothing special considering they're on Ring of Honor. They're just kind of there. But as far as these, if I were to rank all the acts on ROH simply from my favorite to least, I'm pretty sure the dogs would be on the bottom. I can't think of who would be below them. But I don't know. I got to spend some more time with these guys and find out. As far as the gauntlet goes itself, I think that this is a missed opportunity. I mean, we're talking in here about how the Bucks are the only team that can win this. That, to me, is the biggest reason to have somebody else win it. These gauntlets, like, they're tailor-made to protect teams and also to elevate teams. I suppose that it kind of elevated Bruiser and Malonis, but they beat... They beat the dogs, who are
enhancement.
They're, you know, enhancement, and they beat a singles
handicap
wrestler.
Match. Yeah.
So, and then they lost in their third match, and they beat the two guys that that would have been popcorn that you knew were not going to win any matches in this. Everybody else you thought they might, and everyone else did except the Kingdom. So I don't know. I guess I just thought you could move someone up the ladder here, I suppose. Now, obviously, the Young Bucks versus the Briscoes is going to be good. We know that already. We've seen them both work at thousands of matches. But I just feel like if your rosters this week, as far as tag teams go, then this is the exact time you should be moving somebody up, because the Young Bucks can get number one contendership in a million different ways, and you can hold off on that. The other thing that bugged me here is that you have this long 35-minute journey, 5 different teams trying to get a shot at the Briscoes, and then Bound by Honor is announced, and it's Briscoes defending against Motor City Machine Guns. It's like, well, what the hell? Why did we put so much stock into this gauntlet if then somebody else was just going to get a tag team match, just named tag team title
match? I think that's their rematch, because Briscoes won the titles from the Guns.
Okay, I didn't realize they were the last ones. Okay, yeah. Then I guess that's okay. And not as big of a deal. I just thought it was funny that they won this, the Bucks won this, and for some, like, it was not announced, I don't think, when they're going to have this match, which is, I want to say, a real weakness in ROH, is that
I think the tip-off that's probably going to happen on TV.
Yeah, they don't announce often when things are going to go. You put up all these matches that are going to be on Bound by Honor, and I didn't know about almost any of them.
Oh, yeah. All their match announcements seem to come through Twitter or RHWrestling.com. Yeah. Very rarely
that just
on television.
Blows my mind. It just seems so short-sighted as far as getting people excited for pay-per-views. But I don't know. Maybe I'll get used to it. As far as just the gauntlet quality itself, I actually think Bruiser and Malonis have – I think they're an important addition to ROH. In the past, they haven't had this, like, monster team that was not – and Bruiser can sort of work. He's okay. And Malonis is just a great big dude, and he's not – like, I would never care about this act at all, but I think in the confines of a tag team that's indestructible, I'm fine with that. They're gonna essentially be like the Big Show or Kane, the unstoppable team that everybody stops. That's what is going to happen with these guys, and That's fine.
Yeah, they seem to have been put together to fill the void left by War Machine.
Yeah, and that's – I think that's okay. They're no great shakes, but I think that it will give us a different look. We know that the guns and the Bucks and maybe the Kingdom and definitely the Briscoes can give us these awesome 4 or 5 star matches. I think we need to slow down the pace every now and then. I think that's fine. To have them, but I don't know, hopefully they can get some people moved up the ladder, because the Bucks, it just seemed a little obvious to me to have the Bucks go over, as awesome as they are.
Yeah, and I totally see that, but I also don't know who else they would have gone with here if not the Bucks. That's kind of the corner we've painted ourselves into.
And I guess that's what I mean by elevate somebody, because if this is going to be blown off on TV, then who cares? Just have the Dogs get some like super bullshit victory somehow and have them somehow escape with a win, just some asinine win that they don't deserve, because it's all going to be blown off on TV anyway. But that's not how I think Ring of Honor operates, and that's fine.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Well, there's with this new Talking Honor that I'm trying some things out and revamping the show to a certain extent. One idea I had was to do kind of a longer form discussion each week around a certain pro wrestling topic, not necessarily directly tied to anything from this week's TV, but in this case, I was inspired by this week's TV. So I thought we could talk about tag team wrestling. You guys watch a lot more New Japan than I do. I know New Japan Pro Wrestling tends to feature tag team wrestling a lot, don't they?
Yeah, and often not with just 4 men. Like, often a lot more men than that, 3, 4, 5 on a team.
Yeah, and also, but not just in pro, it's always the, I'm tripping over my words. Unlike with ROH, WWE, certain other companies, it's not the mid-carders. I mean, that's not fair to say. The Young Bucks could be more. I don't know. I'm bumbling this terribly. Let's use WWE as an example. The WWE tag division always seems to be the home for mid-carders or singles acts that we didn't know what to do with. We have these two singles mid-card guys. They don't have anything going on. We don't know what to do with them. Put them together as a tag team. We'll do that for a while. That's not necessarily the case in New Japan. You get the big names. You get your Tanahashis and your Okadas wrestling in tag matches. And you'll get tag matches in the main event of big shows and pay-per-views, correct?
Yeah, now and then. If there's going to be no title match, then yeah, we'll see that sometimes.
So, yeah, my general question, I'll put it forth to Urson first, then Kelly can respond. Tag team wrestling, why is it always seen and viewed or positioned as being secondary to singles wrestling? Why do we have this inherent view or idea that a singles match is better than a tag team match? A singles match, two guys competing for the singles title, that's a main event of a pay-per-view. Two teams competing for the tag titles, that's like halfway through the card.
Harley, I think that's an excellent question. Before I answer that, I want to say, since both of you guys cover NXT, first of all, I don't know this WWE thing that you guys are talking about. I don't know what that is. I'm sorry, so I can't comment on that, since both of you guys cover NXT, Flip Gordon, I want to get on the Flip train now. so that, because he'll be in NXT in a year or two, and I want y'all to know that I was on.
You were there.
that I was there. Sorry for that. That's an awesome question about tag team wrestling, and I think if you go back to, I mean, when I was a kid and I started watching wrestling in the 1980s, tag team wrestling was huge. You know, I mean, you had the Road Warriors and you had the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs and, you know, all these great tag teams in the NWA and WWF. And you're absolutely right. Nowadays, tag team wrestling is kind of an afterthought. And I think there's probably multiple reasons for this. But the one that jumps out at me first in this multifaceted question is I think that, especially here in America, I don't want to speak about New Japan right now, but especially here in America, I think fans through the WWE have kind of been desensitized to tag team wrestling because of like Raw and SmackDown for years end with 8-man tag matches or whatever, you know? And so fans see that so much week after week after week, year after year after year, decade after decade, that when you see a tag match with four guys, you're like, oh, okay, a tag match. Wow. You know, this is not a big deal. To me, I think that's problem number one, is just the overuse on television of, specifically by the WWE, of multi-man tag matches to close every episode of Raw with. I don't know. That's the first thing that jumps out at me.
Yeah, the idea that the tag match is just used as an excuse to get a bunch of people in one match together. It's not because this is going to be a terrific match. It's just, oh, here's a way to get these two guys against each other without having to do a singles match.
Right. And I get that from a booking standpoint, for sure. Like, you got to keep these guys apart in terms of, because you got to have them on the show, because that's the goal now, is to have everybody on every show, which I think has made things happen way too quickly. I get why it happens from a booking standpoint, because you don't want to blow up too many singles matches too quick. So you take tag teams and put them in singles matches, and singles wrestlers and put them in tag matches, because that way they're not if they lose, it doesn't matter, because they're not doing their own thing, you know?
Yeah, and I got to assume most of this stuff, the reason wrestling is presented the way it is or booked the way it is, probably derives from costs and business more than an artistic standpoint. So we want two guys going one-on-one in the main event of our big pay-per-view, because it's cheaper to pay two guys than it is to book a 6-man match in the main event of WrestleMania and have to pay six guys main event level paychecks.
I guess that might be part of it. I think that Vince was kind of against tag team wrestling as a main event a lot longer ago than that. I mean, we did see late 80s,
yeah, he definitely
early
is now
90s.
And still.
Yeah, yeah. We saw a decent – there was some decent stuff when I was a kid. There was some really great stuff in NWA when I was young with the Crockett Cup and everything like that. A two-day 32-team tournament. I mean, that's awesome to me that they had enough tag teams around the territories to actually do a tournament like that. I love tag team wrestling, and I love it as it's supposed to be, where the heels cheat a lot. If I'm watching a tag team match where heels are cheating a ton, like, I'm in heaven. Like, that's my favorite thing to see. And then seeing how the faces overcome that, because there's just so many ways to get creative in tag team matches. For me, the number one reason that it's not seen as the draw it could be is Vince McMahon. Teams aren't booked as the main event because they haven't been booked as the main event. So it's just this catch 22. They're in this vicious cycle. They can't be the main event because they haven't been. You had like the New Day versus Usos feud, this could have main evented some major shows. It really could. Instead, because it's a tag team match, sometimes it was on the pre-show. And it would be the best show on the event. And what kills me is that they had the ability to make the tag title matches seem that tag titles seem that much more important, because Brock Lesnar is gone and he's literally only working half the pay-per-views in the year that Raw was working. So you could have put main events that were the tag titles there. Instead, you're using them on Roman, and it's like we've already rejected that. Like, we've already turned that down. That's not what we want in the main event. Why don't you make one of your other titles seem like it's that much more important? And we've never seen that. NXT, we did have one tag team title match in the main event of a takeover, but that is because there was a major, major storyline happening afterward. And if that major team breakup hadn't been happening, I doubt very much it would have been booked in that position. But at least it was booked in that position. So if nothing else, it does seem like Triple H sees the benefits of tag team wrestling and what it can be and the draw it can be more than Vince does, because Vince has not seemed to grasp that since the days of LOD, when LOD could actually main event pay-per-views. They only did one. It was a Survivor Series, but he knew that they could main event pay-per-views.
I think that's a huge problem that spreads, you know, the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
Easily one of the, you know, most popular.
Possibly the most popular act in all of ROH right now.
Yeah. One of the most popular, acts in the, to me, in the world.
In the world, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, easily outside of the WWE. We know that they can draw, you know, we know that that's why these independent companies, you know, book them. And that's why Ring of Honor signs them to contracts and stuff, is because they can, you know, make money and people will pay to go see them. The more kind of desperate question is, like, why don't other teams outside of WWE, are they just not draws? Does tag team wrestling still draw in 2018, you know?
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
I mean, Bucks and Golden Lovers headlined the last or one of the recent New Japan pay-per-views, right? So they got to be in that main event show-closing spot. But
absolutely.
But then the Bucks are over in ROH, and they're always... TV's different, but on most of the ROH pay-per-views, Masters of the Craft last night, they're right there in the middle of the card. Last time a tag match headlined an ROH big event, I want to say was Supercard of Honor last year, Bucks and the Hardys in a ladder match for the tag titles. And so, I don't know, we've seen ROH New Japan, the tag team guys can climb over the singles guys. If there's certain it has to be big extenuating circumstances, though. It has to be a really huge matchup between two very popular teams, big stakes on the line. Otherwise, an average singles match will always be booked over an average tag match.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't hate them for that decision, because you've got to put over your company's main title. And so the more you can have, if you have the main title on the show, then it should probably go on last. And I get that. And there were always, and we had workers in the past who undercut that. Hogan was like, I don't care that Savage is going to go over Flair. I'm in the main event of WrestleMania 8 or whatever. And it just, I think that was a bad look because that had never been done. And I think that was kind of one of those early things that started the backlash against Hogan because of that spot. I don't think you bury that world title under any match if you can avoid it, unless it's like the special event, like the Survivor Series match, the Royal Rumble match, or some other gimmick like that. I think it makes sense to keep the world title strong. I get that, but
why but does the world title have to be the bigger title than the tag titles?
I think it's just that you have to choose one. And but as for why, I don't know. I think that people like the idea of one person saying to hell with everything else in the world and being – it's the same thing in screenwriting. You write – like there are buddy movies and everything like that, but you typically have a central character because people get into the story of a central character more. It just seems like – it seems more relatable than a pair. And I think that's where that comes from. But pro wrestling is a different beast.
Then why is the Avengers the most sought-after superhero movie?
Okay, yeah. I'm not talking about – multiverses and the way that that whole thing is a different ball of wax, but most of the movies are around a single character, and then it's a special event when it's about a ton of different characters. So
yeah, and I don't know, if do we think of tag team wrestling as a different genre, or is it just a different division? There are whole wrestling promotions. This promotion, just female wrestlers. This promotion, just cruiserweights. I can't think of any promotion that is just tag team wrestling.
You know, Chikara started out, that was going to be the thing. They actually did not have a singles title at first. They only had tag titles. And I know I talk about Chikara some on our NXT podcast because I love Chikara because it's weird and absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, their tag titles were first, and they weren't even going to have a singles title. But there was just kind of some pushback over that. Fans wanted one. So fans are definitely perpetuating that stereotype that it can't just be about tag teams, even though that's what they wanted it to be about.
Well, Urson, do you think teams like the Young Bucks and the Golden Lovers will be able to sway this and make tag teams more credible, make the tag team titles seem on par with the world title?
I think going back again, you know, if we go back to the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, we can sit here and we can run down all of the really great tag teams and the tag teams that, you know, we either watched or we like to watch, or we go on the network and watch, or we actually saw live, or we got some VHS and beta tapes or whatever. You know, there were so many teams, and, you know, post 2005 or somewhere around there. I love tag team wrestling. I want to see more tag team wrestling. You know, I love tag team wrestling, but I just don't, I think, you know, there has to be a hot act, and then the promoters have to push that hot act, you know, like, the Young Bucks, great, okay, but outside of the Young Bucks, there needs to be, you know, a hot team, and then that hot team needs to get pushed, and the tag titles need to be presented as, you know, on the same level or slightly below or whatever. It's just the presentation of the titles needs to seem more legitimate, you know? So I think it's kind of a combination of, we just don't have that many exciting teams. And the few exciting teams that we do have need to get, like, we just went through this gauntlet thing where we had, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 teams. And just my personal opinion, the only one that I really got into was the Young Bucks. And kind of the Motor City Machine Guns, just, I guess, you know, for whatever reason. But I don't know, you know. They did have War Machine. Now they're over in Triple H's ROH. And
ROH-HH.
I have definitely seen that written before. Yeah.
That's the first time I've ever heard that. That is fantabulous.
I just thought of it, so there you go.
R-O-H-H-H. Yeah, I mean, now they're the War Raiders or whatever.
Yeah.
I think we need cooler teams that get pushed more.
Yeah, you got to find time to actually present them that way, too. And that could be nature of the beast here as well, because we've only got a week of an hour of TV each week. And so, yes, this week we got to see every tag team. But for the most part, we probably don't see these guys that often in positions that actually move them up the card. And you don't want to have too many enhancement matches. So who are the dogs going to beat? Because nobody wants to see the dogs versus an enhancement team, but who else are the dogs going to beat? So you've already got a team that already looks like they're nothing on the roster. I just don't know. When you've only got that much TV time, it's very hard to keep guys over. That's where the art of the promo comes in. Give us some backstage promos, things like that. And that's how guys got over in the old days. You could have somebody be super over despite only having had two or three matches on TV at that point. But it seems like when there's only so much time to push certain acts, they focus on the singles acts because the singles acts are the ones that are going to challenge for Dalton Castle's world title. I guess that brings us back to the initial question that none of us can quite answer.
So a large part of it is just, the answer is just, that's the way it's been.
Yeah, but
that's kind of what I've been trying to say. And I apologize if it hasn't come out right, is it didn't always used to be this way. I mean, Freebirds headlined, Road Warriors headlined back in the olden days. Yeah. You know, I mean,
and teams stayed together longer than a year or two. Now it seems like once you drop the titles, well, we'll have them turn on each other and feud.
Yeah, Freebirds versus Von Erichs headlined all over the South, all over.
I live in Louisiana. You know, when the Freebirds came around here, that was a huge deal. When I was a kid. So, the Road Warriors, huge deal. Like Von Erichs, great example, huge deal. So I think it's a right now problem or a last 10, 15 years problem. It's definitely not a forever problem. Like historically, it's kind of like a 21st century problem almost.
I think teams are in a slightly better position than they have been. I remember, this is always whenever I'm talking about this, and it seems like it comes up often, what I always think of is this time on Raw. I was watching Raw in 1993 or four, early on in Raw's history. And Vince made he was talking about the Smoking Guns, and he said, the tag team champions, they're absolutely the best tag team in the WWE. Well, he would have said F at that point. And at the time, I used to keep like notes of the roster. Like I would have the roster split into faces and heels and like teams on each side. And at the time that he said the Smoking Guns are the best team in the WWF, they were literally the only team in the WWF. It was insane. Like it's the only time I remember it being like that. And you knew that the next team, the team who beat him, was going to have to be some makeshift. I think that's probably when it ended up being Owen and Yokozuna, but maybe this was later. He would talk about them being the greatest team. And I go, well, how could they not be? There was such a small, it's like he only had them as a team to prove that he had a division. But otherwise, there was no division to speak of. They beat jobbers and then they beat makeshift heels. Like Repo Man would be in tag matches, like with Skinner, I want to say. It was something like that. So I don't know. It's better than it's been. It's absolutely better than it's been. But I hope we can see some tag team matches. Yeah. Main event, a couple of shows. WWE alone has like 12 to 15 pay-per-views a year. The tag teams can headline at least two or three of those, I would think.
Yeah. Why couldn't the Bucks and the Briscoes headline the next Honor Club event if it's just a house show anyway, right?
Right. They absolutely can and should, because that match will be dynamite.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
All right. So there you go. That's our new feature where we're going to try to discuss big questions. I think it turned out okay. Mailbag this week. We got one email. It's our first email in over a month, so that's how you know the show is on the up and up. This show is the podcast equivalent of Tag Team Wrestling. Stephen Bullware from Bloomington, I don't know, you're American. MN, that's Minnesota, right?
Minnesota, that is about 10 miles from me.
All right. Kelly's neighbor, Stephen Bullware, writes in, "Hello. I took the plunge and joined Honor Club in large part because I was listening to your podcast and wanted to branch out from WWE. Any recommendations on what Honor Club shows are more important to watch? Which ones are glorified house shows and which are more likely to advance storylines, have higher profile matches? Not sure if it's too soon to know, but I thought I'd bounce it off you to see if you have a recommendation." So Honor Club's only been maybe 2-3 months now, I feel. The official pay-per-views so far this year, 16th anniversary show, and Supercard of Honor. Everything else on Honor Club, Honor Reigns Supreme, Masters of the Craft, those are your more house show events. So far just the two from 2018, the 16th anniversary and Supercard. Next one, I believe, is War of the Worlds, which is coming to you May 12th from my neck of the woods up in Canada. And going forward, I don't know. Rich doesn't really distinguish on their end. They don't really say this is a big deal pay-per-view versus this is a live event. I think because they're trying to raise the importance of all live events, making them all seem like big deals. But definitely those three would be the pay-per-views for now.
And I would add that on the website, on ROHWrestling.com, they do split it there, even though they are very cagey about which ones are and are not super important. They do have them split up in their video sections where, like, the pay-per-views are in one place and the rest is, I don't remember what they call it, video on demand.
ROH on tour, I think.
Yeah, ROH on tour are the ones that aren't as important. And so the one we talked about today was Masters of the Craft. That's in the on tour section. But if you stick with that pay-per-view section, that's actually where you're going to find that. What you want.
There you go. And the next ROH live event, not a pay-per-view, is Bound by Honor, West Palm Beach, Florida. That's going to be about a week and a half, Saturday the 27th. We've got a couple of matches announced. Cody and Punishment Martinez, Jay Lethal and Scorpio Sky, Briscoe's defending their tag titles against the Machine Guns, Castle and Flip Gordon in a Proving Ground match. Kelly, you know what a Proving Ground match is?
I don't, and I was going to ask you that right now.
I might be wrong, but I believe 20-minute time limit. If Flip beats Dalton or goes to the time limit draw, he'll earn a future title shot.
All right.
Urson, is that correct? Does that sound right?
Yeah, you know, that's it. Were you confused about the – I'm sorry. Maybe we'll talk more about this Wednesday, but were you confused with the – see, like that right there, that's a confusing stipulation. Like, I don't know why they're doing that. So Flip can beat Dalton Castle, but he doesn't get the belt. And we kind of did that at Masters of the Craft. Like, we had this, like, crazy – I don't know why Ring of Honor – some of this stuff is – the booking is just kind of weird. Like, you know –
Vince McMahon has had these conversations, I know, backstage with people where he said, if you cannot explain a stipulation in one sentence and then just have them immediately get it and never ask you another question, then it might be too complicated because Defy or Deny is kind of cool, but it's also very stupid in that the person who goes the limit, if they get beat by the champ, they're the one that gets punished. That doesn't make any sense. That
yeah,
like, the first
Castle,
and second
Castle
one don't get punished.
Skrull at the end.
Right.
Skrull and never would have gotten another match.
Yeah.
But Punishment and Bruiser could.
Right. And that was an odd – it's just a really odd way to go about things. And I get that they want to try new things and have matches that are all their own, because you can do matches that are retreads of the WWE, but you really look like your own company when you're having your own. But one of those things that Vince does really well is he says, hey, you've got to keep it somewhat simple with these stipulations. Like, don't go overly high concept with this stuff.
No, it's just like, I mean, I threw it out there on Twitter and I had some people trying to explain it to me. And I still don't really understand it. I need Sean and Harley to really, really break it down for me. Because
I'll draw you a map.
Yeah, send it as a PDF document. Yeah, but like, if say somebody would have pinned Castle and then they themselves would have got pinned. Like, what would have happened then? Like, I pinned Castle, I don't get the belt. The guy who pins me, he doesn't get the belt. Nobody gets the belt.
Right. Yeah. And if you pin Castle and then lose, you also don't even get a title match. Or at least you're not guaranteed one.
Yeah. But the commentators did point out,
they
said.
They talk about that.
Yeah. They said he wouldn't officially get a match, but he should definitely. Anytime you can pin the champion, you should be in line for a title shot.
I just think the match would work better if it was just one pin. Now, normally I don't say that. If I see a four-way, I want elimination rules. But if this is Defy or Deny, I think it would probably work better if it was just one pin.
Yeah, can the champion get a match?
I think we know why they don't do it very often. I'll say that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of this before this event. I'll say that.
I understand to the Skrull victory and stuff, but I prefer the way New Japan does it more, where they'll have a tag match on one of the like Road 2 shows or whatever, and the champion will get pinned by someone, and the guy who pinned the champion gets a title shot. Yeah. I prefer that more than this like convoluted mess of four guys that kind of get eliminated, and or just these things like you just mentioned with the Proving Ground match where, hey, even if you beat him, you know, you're not, we might give you a shot later down the road, but you're not going to get the belt. I think if you beat the champion, you should get the belt, period. End of discussion. But it's just my opinion. I'll probably be kicked off this podcast and stuff. So nobody will have to listen to me ever again.
No, I'm with you as well. I'm not a purist in very many ways about wrestling, because wrestling is just, it's silly and it's going somewhere, and I get that. But I also think that the less the champion can lose, the better. And in WWE, we don't see anybody worse at that than WWE as far as mid-card titles go. Those guys lose all the time. They lose all the time to set up stuff. AJ was losing all the time in his non-title defenses. And I just don't think, like, have it be, if you lose all the time as a champion, it's not going to be a big deal when you do, and it matters. So make it few and far between. I definitely think that not very many matches should be title matches. I think most title matches should be non-title, or most matches they have should be non-title, because the person hasn't earned it. I'm a big fan of wrestlers earning their way to a title match. But in the meantime, just don't have them lose those matches. There are other ways to get stuff in motion.
ROH is pretty good about protecting their champions. I believe two of the three best records in the company this year belong to the Briscoes and Sumi Sakai, current champions. And then Castle and Silas, he lost a couple matches when he wasn't champion. But Castle, I think this was his first pinfall since Final Battle. And it was during a four-way match after beating two other guys. So he was protected in a sense.
Right.
Anyway, that's it for this week's show, I believe. We kind of covered a lot of stuff, and we're up to the hour and a half mark. So nothing advertised for next week. That's another thing. ROH is usually pretty good about saying, hey, next week you'll have this match. Nothing. So total surprise there. But next week will be the first set of tapings post-Supercard. So hopefully we'll get something going on with Castle and Skrull, with Bullet Club. Hopefully women's division gets some airtime now that we have a champion. Lots of surprises in store there. You can always reach myself and this show, talkinghonor@gmail.com, or find me on Twitter @talkinghonor. Kelly, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter @spookymilk. I don't tweet a lot, but I always tweet back at you if you tweet at me. Normally when I'm tweeting, I'm well into my beers, so you can safely ignore most of the stuff that I tweet about. But that's it. I'm @SpookyMilk, and otherwise you can hear me on Wednesday nights or Thursday morning during your commute on PWT Talks NXT on the Torch.
And Urson, where can folks get a hold of you?
I live on the tweet machine. Just type in my first name, URSIN, and I'll be the first person that pops up. And I live to talk about professional wrestling, so hit me up on Twitter, and good, bad, or indifferent, and I want to talk to you about it. So let's talk about Ring of Honor, Masters of the Craft, ROH TV, and whatever else you desire.
Well, as of right now, you have one more follower.
Thanks, brother. as do you. And I also imbibe in adult beverages generally after 5 p.m. So that's a really good time to tweet.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I always care, but then I care and I'm also a dick about it. So there you go.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, guys, both of you, for joining me today. Thank you, listeners, for not giving up and walking away when Lola left the show, for sticking around and giving this a little test out and see where we go from here. I will be back next week to discuss Ring of Honor Television and the dark unknown future of Talking Honor. Thanks for listening.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!